Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Dan, it's a moment we'll never forget, like when the Beatles came on iTunes.
Are the Beatles on iTunes?
They are. You forgot.
I did.
Mark it. Today is the day that Amazon finally made it so that when you turn off your Kindle, it shows you the cover of the book you're reading.
Wow. I'm amazed they finally devised the technology. They must have been years in the making.
I jailbroke a Kindle like 10 years ago to do this. And I mean, it's such an obvious thing. I don't know why they didn't do it. It was one of those examples of like me despairing for any good software improvements to the Kindle, because if they couldn't do this thing, what were they even doing? And I think the truth is, for a long time, the prevailing wisdom within Amazon was, let's just push everybody toward the special offers version that's got ads on the screen for $20 less or whatever, and let's just do that. But, you know, I would pay to get the ads off the screen, but I couldn't put anything on the screen, not my photos, not the book covers. And so it ended
like
up
random wallpapers, right?
Yeah, like, it's just like a newspaper or movable type or a pen. And I bought a new Kindle last year and handed mine down to Lauren, but they're both Kindle Oasises. There are several moments where we're like, wait, which one is yours? And now, done.
Yeah.
Done, because it's the cover of the book we're reading is on it.
You don't sit around going, which book is yours, right? Yeah. You know which book
we
is
know
yours.
Which yeah. book. So it's such a dumb thing, but
it is a dumb thing. Oh. And I actually ponied up the $20 today for my Paperwhite, because I had been like, well, why bother? You know, like I don't like the ads, but if I can't even put the book cover on there, it doesn't matter to me.
Right.
So I spent the $20 today. I was like, all right, you got that feature? You know what? Here's your $20. Get rid of my ads. And now I'll have book covers on it and I will feel much better about it. I'm excited to see that there. I love that it's still a toggle. Just in case. Random stuff on
well,
there.
Well, I would say, yeah, in case you don't want people to know what you're reading, which I
sure,
get that.
That's fine. But you probably still can't pick something else, right? Like, you can't have your own choice.
Right. When I jailbroke my Kindle for a while there, what I had to do is I had to put grayscale images of a certain dimension in a folder on the Kindle, and then it would cycle through those. So I was making my own custom screensaver, and then they did something where you could get the book on there, and it would have the cover of the book instead, and that was better. It's funny that this happened though, because I just bought a Kobo, which I haven't written about, but I will. I already had a Kobo. I had the Kobo Aura, and I wrote about that on Six Colors. It was nice. It's big, but it was like a big screen, and it was waterproof. It didn't have page turn buttons, which is the thing that ultimately got me to buy the Kobo Libra H2O, which is essentially a plasticky version of the Kindle Oasis, but a lot cheaper and not a Kindle. But I was reading that other Kobo, and quick version is Kobo has OverDrive built into it, which means that I can see all the books that I've set to check out from the library using the Libby app on my iPhone that I wrote about on Six Colors. I've been using a Kobo as my library ebook reader and sort of switching back and forth between the Kindle. Again, you probably shouldn't have two, but it's me. I have two. I'm turning to Scott McNulty. It's fine. But now I have three, I guess, except I've retired that other older Kobo with this new one, which is almost a dead ringer for my Kindle Oasis. But I'm really liking it. And the cover was one reason. But there are some other nice things in there too. It's got a brightness adjust gesture. You put your finger right on the edge, the left edge, and slide up and down, and it just automatically adjusts the brightness, which is really nice. And the real reason, and the OverDrive support, which is sort of my number one reason, is that you can do OverDrive in Kindle, but you kind of have to go to the Kindle website and send your book to the Kindle, whereas this is just, it's all built into the device itself. You can see your wish list.
I have to go to Libby. I can do it on my Kindle, but I just have to do it through Libby.
Yes. Well, that's it. Yeah. You can use them on the Kindle, but you have to, the Kindle itself is dumb.
I can't go find them.
Because I think what it's really doing is it's going to Amazon and saying, okay, send them that book that you've got, and we'll call it a library book, but it's really actually like an Amazon loan. It's weird.
Yeah. Dirty Secrets, obviously, being you just turn off your Wi-Fi if you haven't finished the book by the time you hit return.
Yeah.
Which I've definitely done.
Yeah.
I'm like, so, 2 weeks to read a 1,000-page book, and it's not going to happen.
But the other reason that I like the Kobo is the typography's better. And I don't know, again, it's in the list of, like, in a decade, why has Kindle not gotten better at this? And they've done some stuff where they don't force justify everything anymore, and you can put in different fonts and all of that. And yet, the type is smoother and clearer and easier to read on the Kobo than the Kindle. And there is nothing I can do on the Kindle, and I've tried all the settings, to make it look as good as it does on the Kobo. So I that and my increased ambivalence toward Amazon in general, and especially about books on Kindle devices, I decided, yeah, I'm going to buy that Kobo, and I'm going to use that, and I'll still use my Kindle some probably, but I wanted to give this a fair shake, and it's pretty nice. It's a pretty nice e-reader. If you're not locked into the Kindle platform in some way and you're looking for an e-reader, I think the Kobo stuff, they've got their own store and bookstore and stuff like that too. So
yeah, I have been tempted to do that just because I've gotten frustrated with Amazon, like, as a business and market.
Yeah.
The fact that they're so dominant in the industry, and I'm like, oh, I just keep using it because it's what I've got. And then I kind of have that moment of, like, I feel like maybe I should be putting my money where my mouth is and spending more time in other ecosystems just to, you know, do my part to sort of bolster the competition, because Amazon's position in the ebook market is just, it's just enormous. It's just dominant. And like, Kobo, from everybody I know who uses them, people really like them.
The hardware is really good, and the software is really good. Really, it's the gravitational force of the Amazon bookstore.
Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah. But I probably won't buy another Kindle immediately.
That's a tip.
What kept me. There was a Oasis on sale the other day, and I was like, no, next time I buy it, I'm not going to buy a Kindle because the Paperwhite I have is fine.
Right. Yeah, well, so far, this is just, you heard it here first, really liking that Kobo, the H2O. So Libre H2O. So check that out if you're in thinking of an ebook reader and might consider a non-Kindle one. And I'll say this, and this is perfectly good because I've got a published author right here, which is, one, don't pirate anything, okay?
Please don't.
Two, if you download Calibre, there's a DDRM plugin, and it didn't work for a while, but it works again, and you put in, like, you can put in, like, your Kindle ID, and then you go to the Kindle website and you can download to sideload via USB, in quotes, download Kindle books from there. And when you import them in with that plugin turned on, if you import them into Calibre, it strips the DRM off of them, if it has it. Some publishers like Tor have DRM at all. And so I'm actually reading the sequel to A Memory Called Empire, which is A Desolation Called Peace. Memory Called Empire, my favorite book of last year. And I started that on the Kindle, and I downloaded the file and put it on the Kobo, and I've been reading it on the Kobo. Because, again, I bought the book. I'm not gonna cheat. I'm gonna buy the books. But I actually, with that piece of software, I was able to migrate some of the stuff I was reading on my Kindle to the Kobo. Which I like. I mean, that's how I felt about iTunes stuff I bought too, is I kind of want a copy without DRM so I can do what I want with it after I've bought it. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but right.
No, I appreciate that.
Next up for me, though, I'm going to have to read this. Somebody sent me a beta of their new novel to give comments about. So
that's nice. That's nice of them.
People who do that are nice, aren't they?
People who do that are nice. It is nice to
they're
hear
the best.
From.
So,
yeah.
So Apple event on Tuesday.
Yeah, so after much deliberation as to whether or not such a thing would happen,
it's happening. The sickening.
Interesting. The sickening. It's happening. It's interesting because it's late.
It's
later than we would have expected. I heard you and Mike talking about this, and I agreed. Like, I think there's so much going on in the market right now, especially with all that chip shortage stuff. I think that this is later than they had planned on, and that it is. You know, because I think between that and the betas running to beta 8, which is unusual, it's not unheard of, but it's unusual for a midstream update, even one with as many features as 14.5 seems to have. I think they are just kind of biding their times until they felt like they could ship whatever they're going to ship in volume. So that's fine. I mean, and it's also very, you know, it's surprisingly close to WWC in some ways, right? It's like 6 weeks or less from WWC. So that'll probably be what we're talking about until WWC rolls around. And as to what we're talking about, I don't know. Do you have any good... The iPad Pro seems pretty likely, I think. I'm not sure. There's a lot of other things iMac. Spinning around out there. You think the iMac?
Yeah,
the,
I think...
Apple Silicon?
If I had... And I'm as we record this, I'm about to do my draft with Mike in like an hour. Mm. So right now, if I had to lay down my cold, hard fact... Not fact. Predictions.
Yeah.
They would be iPad Pro.
Yep.
Two models... big one with the new display technology, maybe both with Thunderbolt, a new accessory for the iPad of some kind. I'm thinking Magic Keyboard 2.
Mm.
With some maybe some different a different way that it is constructed and maybe backlight and maybe function keys. I don't know about that, but like something new could also be a Pencil 3.
Yeah, that's gained some steam in the last day or
right?
two, and that makes sense with the writing thing. The spring kind of thing looks very codified.
Oh yeah, it looks like something drawn with an Apple Pencil.
There was a hilarious conspiracy theory that actually was kind of funny about how if you separate out certain parts of it, it fits over the classic hello from the original Macintosh. So you
great,
know, like there you go.
I'm sure,
there's
it does.
A conspiracy theory.
So. That's sort of my general purpose sort of iPad thing is I think it'll be... Oh, and my wild card there is... this is great because we're one of the only podcasts left that doesn't do competitions regarding Apple events. But I'll throw in a wild card here, which is I wonder if they do Thunderbolt, how they're going to justify it. And if they do, I feel like a new windowing system for external displays is probably... more than they're going to be capable of doing before a new version of iOS. But I did have a thought the other day, which is, what if they finally do like Final Cut for iPad?
Huh.
And say, well, this is good because you can do, you know, you can, it'll work on an external display and it'll do fast storage and it finally enables all these pro features that we didn't have before. That's something that they could maybe do pro apps on the iPad and explain that's why we need the pro IO of Thunderbolt on this thing. That's just a wild card, but I thought I would throw it out there as a possibility
because
if they do put Thunderbolt on this, which we don't know for sure, but if they do, you would want them to explain why, right?
Right. It's not just, you can connect a faster drive. Like that's good, but like. How
right?
many people are connecting drives right now?
And display
is, really
is the obvious
better?
One, but I think that requires...
There's a lot of questions about what that means.
I was saying to somebody the other day, like, yeah, but if you start pulling on that thread, because like in the basics of like, and they'll do external display support. Yeah, that sounds great. Like they've already got the pointer, so mouse and keyboard, they've got all of that. The problem is you have to reinvent the windowing because on a 27 or 30 or 32 inch display,
a giant app.
You can't put an iPad app. You can't do it. So what are you doing
It'll
then?
Look bizarre.
Are you? I mean, and I can think of how you would do it, but it starts to become a big thing because now you have to introduce the concept of windowing because you could put those iPad shaped. Apps in Windows on an external display, but like that's a lot. That's a big
here's a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Here's a conspiracy theory, bit like that, like a way that might happen in the same way that we got the assistive touch, ability,
right?
Where it's like, all right, it's the pointer, but it's not really a mouse, you know, it's fine. And then later on, the Magic Keyboard came out. Part of me wonders if you could do something like, well, we've added the ability to connect it to an external display, but in like a lower resolution so that if you have trouble seeing text on a small screen, we can put it on a big screen. And everyone's like, I guess that makes sense, but is that maybe just like it'll work. It just won't work great.
It won't be great.
And then later they will add like, now we've reinvented it and you can use an external.
That's my dark horse about, I already did a wild card. Now it's a dark horse. I'm pulling out all the stops here, people. Would
it's
be
cards,
if they
horses.
If they really do want to do external display as an announcement, but they can't do the whole thing.
Yeah.
What you could do is say, great news. You can attach an external display and any iPad app that's been optimized for Mac. So it supports all the things that get it to Catalyst. Those will work on the external display in the same way. You could even do a menu bar. Mm. I don't think they'll do that. I think that's a bridge too far. But that would be the fallback. Would be literally like you can put iPad shaped windows on the external display, but full screen's not going to work over there. It doesn't really make any sense.
Sure.
So I don't know. It's or they'll say something about like, hey, there. But anything that's hey, there's a new API that you can use. Yeah. That's a WWDC thing, right? That's not sure. That's not a random spring event.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the iPad stuff. And on the Mac side, I feel like it's going to be a 24-inch iMac.
Yeah, that's
it's the
exactly
low,
what I
the low
that's
end
what I
iMac.
Predicted.
Yeah. So bigger screen, smaller bezels, doesn't look that much bigger, but actually a bigger screen, M1 processor. Like all this talk about like a variant. I'd love for there to be a new Apple Silicon story with a new version of the chip. I don't think it's going to happen. I hope it does, but I don't think it is. I think it's going to be an M1 iMac. That's it.
Yeah. At best, I think there's a possibility that it'd be an M1X.
Right. With some more cores.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think it'll M2. And I think the biggest question on the iMac, even on a small iMac, is the I/O. And like, they presumably have to put in some other additional controller or something, right? Because I don't think that two ports,
well,
if that is all I can handle,
I mean,
will
they
be enough for an iMac.
They could do what they did on the Mac Mini, where they're faking some USB-A ports to go with the USB-C ports.
And
they're making it work. Yeah, I mean, there's scenarios out there, right? There's a scenario where there's an M1X. It's literally just some more cores. That would allow them to make a higher-end MacBook Pro and an iMac, and they could do even both iMacs at that point if they wanted to. And I think that's possible, but like thus far, if I again in the like if I'm calling it of what I think is most likely, I think most likely is no new chip story, just an iMac.
They can make the M1 now already. They can make it in volume. So at this point, that makes sense for them to roll it out rather than creating a new problem where it's like, well, we have to produce a new type of chip, especially when there's chip shortages.
And some of the reports out there, and this is informed, of course, by all these supply chain reports, lead me to believe that we're not going to see a new Mac chip until the fall.
When we concur with that.
And then they'll have a new Mac chip, and that's going to enable the high-end MacBook Pro, the high-end iMac, and who knows if there's a weird Mac Pro kind of thing that also comes out of that. But like that feels like a at least second half. So it could, some stuff could get announced at WWDC. They could, I'm sure they would love to do a high-end MacBook Pro with new Apple Silicon chip for the developer audience. I think that that would be a hit. But I don't know. If I'm saying what I think is most likely, I'm going to go a little conservative, and I'm just going to say, it's just going to be an M1. The story is going to be that it's an iMac that looks totally different from all the past iMacs, and is the same price as the existing 21.5-inch iMac, but this is a 24 with a way better screen and Apple Silicon, and that'll be the story.
Yeah, better, more bang for your buck. I think that's the same. I mean, and this will be interesting if they decide to do that, because it will be the first real, even if it's like the M1 so far have been basically stuff a new chip in an existing model, whereas this will be really, you know, potentially the first redesign. And the only thing that gives me pause about that is the idea of like, you know, not having, I would think the 27-inch iMac has been the, you know, sort of flagship, as it were, for that line. And would you not want to release that sort of with your big redesign, or, you know, would you hold that for the fall? I don't know. It's a lot of interesting questions as we're engaged in this transition. I think you're right that the low end is there. My big question mark is whether and how, you know, sort of much it will be changed from the iMac that we already have. But I agree. I don't think they're shipping a 21.5-inch iMac with an M1 chip. That doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, there are lots of options here. I just think the most likely scenario, this is one of those it's never lupus kind of things, or the, what is it, the looking for zebras when it's probably a horse, is I think the most likely scenario is a redesigned small iMac to get rid of the bezels and the chin and all of that. That'll be nice. That'll look nice. And that is enough. And then you put essentially the guts of what's in the Mac Mini in it. And that's it. And that's it. Right. And then because I know it's like, but it's just an M1. Like, you know, first off, the M1 is pretty amazing and will be way better than what's in that low end iMac now.
Yep.
And second off, Apple is biding its time here. Right. Like they're doing everything, but they don't always have to do everything all at once. Right. They're going to take their time. And I want the big iMac, and I want the big iMac with more power. And it's like, that's going to happen. Do I think it's going to happen Tuesday? No, I don't. I think it's going to happen in June or in October, probably in October. And that's okay, right? Like, I feel like the most likely scenario for the chips, with what you said being true, that they could do an M1 variant with more cores, but I feel like the most likely, if we're just bearing it to the most likely scenario, is that there's an A15-based M2 in the fall that will fuel all that stuff. And until then, we're just going to have to wait and use the M1.
Let's keep in mind that they promised a 2-year transition.
Yeah.
And we're not even 6 months into that. Like, you know, they're not going to... And I think... My strong suspicion is that they gave themselves more runway than they needed.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're done before 2 years. But I think they gave themselves that runway just in case.
I think that they're definitely done before 2 years are up. I think there's an outside shot.
They're done by the end of the year.
That they're done by the end of the year. Yeah. With my real hesitancy there only being...
The Mac Pro.
Are they building a super awesome... M2X or something, you know, Pro Mac variant? And if they are, is it based on the A15?
Yeah.
And would they announce that and try to ship it by the end of the year, or would they just kick that into 22?
Yeah, my gut says no. My gut says that is what's holding up that 2 year thing.
That's
That's
a lot to ask, right? If there's already an M2 based on the M15, they also are doing a variant that scales that with GPU, you know, wild GPU stuff that they're doing. Like, boy, that's a lot to ask for the end of 21.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. I my money would say that it ships before they hit the 2 year mark of the first Apple Silicon.
Oh,
so basically fall 22, like they gave them till fall 22, right? Yeah. They say have 2 years, but they can also be like, we finished by essentially WWDC 2022.
Yes. Yeah.
I think is the most likely for a Mac Pro because it's a great audience for it. It gives them enough time to really build it out. And we've seen two generations potentially of Apple Silicon at that point, which gives us a much better sort of understanding of what the pipeline on that looks like.
I'd put money on that too. I think that Apple doesn't set itself deadlines that it knows it can't blow.
Exactly.
That it knows it can't dramatically improve on, right? Like 2 years is, if terrible things happen, we'll still be done in 2 years, right? And then they impress you by saying, it's the under promise over deliver thing.
Absolutely.
That is, I think, the
it's
way
way you better than the other way.
Right. Just ask Elon Musk. I know people love, speaking of Teslas, that's the thing on Liftoff we talk about is like, Elon Musk has these companies that do amazing things, and yet oftentimes the amazing things happen years after he says they're going to do them. And I think it kind of makes him look bad, right? Like, dude, you're doing some amazing stuff at your companies. Why are you saying like, oh, we'll be in Mars in 2 years. Like we'll be on Mars in 2 years. It's like, that's not going to happen. Why are you saying that? But anyway, I drove a Tesla, more than 1,800 miles in the last week. Mm-hmm. I went to visit my mom in Phoenix. We drove. She's fully vaccinated, and we felt like we could finally see her after more than a year. But we didn't want to go through airports or airplanes and crowds at airports and rental car counters and all of that. We just didn't want to do it, so we drove. And Six Colors member... Karen had a, I don't know if I'm actually pronouncing that right because I only text with him, K-A-R-A-N. He had a bunch of shortcuts for the Tesla that I got to borrow. And, so it became a combo story of me driving a fun car and also me test driving a whole bunch of these shortcuts, which I love. I wrote about it on, and linked to his site on Six Colors, but like, I love that there's a Tesla API and that once you get the authentication tokens and all of that, you can just get your data of what your car is doing and it works. And then you can go into those because it's shortcuts. You can actually go in and see the logic of it, which led to a very funny moment when we got to Arizona and plugged into my mom's outlet in her garage. And, he said, I didn't anticipate so many minutes because the shortcut for battery check was something like, it will be charged in 8,223 minutes. And he's like, okay. And so that got, because of that feedback, we figured it out. And in the end, now it will say sort of hours, and it won't be charged until tomorrow. It says tomorrow, because it takes a long time to charge a 300-mile range car that's at almost zero on just somebody's electrical outlet. That's not really you want a level two charger or a supercharger, but it was fun because it was a combination of driving a car that I've only ridden in for about 20 miles and never driven. And over a long distance with all the charging stops, and then this extra tech angle of not only playing with the touchscreen and all of that, but doing the shortcuts. So it was a great experience, and so I wrote an article about it that's on the website. So yeah,
that's
it was
cool.
Fun.
I you know, my car is I was trying to think. Let's see, my car is 8 year. No, what year is it, Jason? 2021. My car will be 9 years old in June. And it's still going fine, although I've like totally held off on taking it in for several things during the pandemic that I desperately need to. And so I don't think I'm in the market for a new car anytime soon, but it's also hard not to, it's hard to imagine that my next car would be anything other than an electric car. It's just, I can't find a way to justify that. It seems like the technology has finally advanced to the point where it's not a weird, like, niche decision that you're making, right? Like, it's actually something that is becoming more and more commonplace in the market. And a bunch of car manufacturers have said, like, we're going to switch our entire line over to, like, electric vehicles, basically, within the next 15 years, which is not nothing. So, yeah, I have a hard time imagining that I'll be buying anything but an electric car next time around, though I will desperately miss my stick shift car.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I miss my Honda Civic with a manual transmission too. But over time, I realized, like, you know, it's just, it's worse. I'll say this, it's worse in an automatic gas car where you can hear it shifting and you're like, I could shift better than that. In an electric car where there's no shifting, you forget about it real fast.
Yeah, I just like it. It's something I like doing.
No,
it's like, I've actually seen, there are a couple of prototypes out there of like a couple of the car manufacturers have made electric cars with shifters. I think one of the E-Mustangs had them, and there's a Jeep that's coming out, or a concept Jeep anyways, that had it. So it's like, in theory, it is possible to do. Like, you can mimic sort of the same thing. And I was like, well, that could be fun. But I also, yes, I'm aware that my car is like, it is a luxury I've afforded myself because it's something I like to do. But it's not something that long run makes a lot of sense.
Our listener, Six Colors member, Karan, said, basically, it's an Indian name, and he doesn't even have the accent for it, but it's K-A-R-A-N, and it just don't call him Karen, okay? It's Karan. But thank you to him for... Also, these were like private shortcuts. He offered them to me, which was very kind of him, and it was really fun to play with them. And then I was writing the story, and I said, can I mention them? And he's like... And there's that moment, and I went through this too on a couple of projects, where it's like, do I really want to get this into the shape that it needs to be in for people to see it, right? For the general public to see it? And he and to his credit, and I was like, I don't need to actually link to them or anything. And he was like, no, I'll brush them up, I'll get them together, and I'll post a little thing, and people could try them out. And then like 30 minutes after I posted the story, somebody sent him a bug report. I was like, oh God, what? Oh no. But anyway, it was a fun adventure. Karan was really very kind and generous to make this thing happen, and yeah, it was fun. And now I got to give the car back, which is going to be sad. But
yeah, I've only ever ridden in one. Let's see, I've ridden in two. I've ridden in my friend Dave Nanian, author of Super Duper's. I think he offered to let me drive it at some point. That was a while ago. And I've ridden in our pal Lex Friedman's, because he has a Tesla.
I sat in Lex's, actually at the hotel before we drove over for your wedding.
Ah, there you go.
And I was just like, "Ooh, can I sit in?" And he's like, "Sure." And I sat in, and I was like, "Cool." And that was it. And then our friend Dr. Wave, who works at Apple and used to work at Pixar, he got it was a 4-year consideration screening. Right, because he's still connected in the movie industry and all that, and it was for an animated movie, and it was at Skywalker Ranch, which, you know, as you might imagine, has a really good theater, and I live in Marin County, and he said he invited me, which was very kind of him. Remember going to the movies with friends? Anyway, and so we met because he's driving from the East Bay and I'm driving up from South Marin. We met in a movie theater parking lot, and I just left my car there, and then we drove his Tesla to that event. And so I didn't mention this in the story, but that's the 20 miles that I've taken. Mm-hmm. It's literally from the freeway to Skywalker Ranch and back on Lucas Valley Road, which is a windy road. It was actually kind of fun in the Tesla, but that's it. That was my total Tesla experience before this. And now I put in 1800 miles, and yeah, I'm never going to buy a non-electric car if I can help it. They're great. Or we already have one, right? But it has no range. And charging, I found the rhythm of doing fast charging on a long road trip, which is most of the time you're not taking road trips, right? Most of the time you're just driving around and you don't need to worry about charging. You can charge at work, you can charge at home, you can make it work. But on the road trips, you have to do it. And what I found is it's just a different rhythm because we already did switch drivers and go to the bathroom and get food and stuff like that on the road trip. And this time we sort of built it around the charging stops because we had to do a couple in each of the legs because they're equidistant almost from here to Orange County to my in-law's house where we stayed as a way station. We always do that. And then from there to Phoenix. And for those who don't know about West Coast geography, literally the best way to get to San Francisco from San Francisco to Phoenix is to go through Los Angeles.
Yep. I've done that drive.
It's so bizarre, but it's true.
Doesn't make any sense, but there's no roads anywhere else.
So we did four almost equidistant legs with two charging stops. That takes about 6-7 hours. And the fact is, we like to switch drivers every couple hours anyway, 2-2.5 hours. You either do sort of four driver legs or three driver legs where there's kind of a long leg in the middle. That's generally how we do it. So we just sort of timed it for the superchargers. And if it weren't for the pandemic, it would have been easier, right? Because one of the easy things to do is plug in the charger and then go into a food place and sit down and eat your food and then go back out. And we couldn't do that. It was all takeout. So we were kind of doing a lot of eating at the car kind of stuff. But it worked really well. And I did get to stop on the way back. Our last stop was at the at a place that's got a Tesla lounge, which is hilarious. Apparently, so a lot of these superchargers are built around fast food restaurant locations where they get some of the parking lot, basically. And I think there's a good deal there for everybody, right? Because what struck me about this more than anything is you want to be around a charging station because they got 20 minutes, 30 minutes to kill. They will eat your food. They will buy your stuff. You really want to be like, it's good. So they built the one that we went to, they built around I think a Burger King was there and it went out of business and they turned it into a Tesla lounge. So your car, literally when you plug in, your car says, here's the door code. And then you put in the door code and normally non-pandemic times, there's like furniture in there. It was all stacked up, but like it's a lounge. It's like an airport lounge. You can like sit and relax and stuff, but there's also vending machines. We were there during the day. There was a barista on duty making coffee and hot chocolate for people. I got a hot chocolate and bathrooms. So I was very impressed with that too.
It's a rest stop.
It's
subsidized.
And so if you think about like going on to a world where there are more and more electric cars, the beauty of having electric infrastructure is it's a lot easier to put in electric chargers than it is to put in gas stations.
Gas stations, yep. And big underground tanks.
And if I had, you know, any restaurant or market or whatever business that was on a big freeway thoroughfare that I wanted to attract electric car people, I would be like, yes, let's put in the electric car chargers because it's, you know, that's what it'll be is like, you just choose where you want to go based on, you know, your charger and what the food options are and you'll just go there. So Tesla needs to do some work personally, I think, on the metadata. I always use iExit, which is, I wrote about it on Six Colors. It's a great app that tells you if you're doing freeway driving, you know, interstate driving, it groups all the food and stuff by exit. So you're like, which exit should we take and what's on that? Or alternately, where's the next, I don't know, Taco Bell, right? Like, and you find it and it's at this exit. And then there's another one at this exit. It's very good. And that kind of Tesla could use that kind of metadata because it would be helpful to know, like, you know, is there food? I need food. Is there food at the supercharger or is there not food at the supercharger? Because at one of them, we had to go to In-N-Out, get our burgers, and then go to the supercharger and charge because it was not near it was near a restaurant, a walk-in restaurant that we weren't going to go in, and so we had to get food first.
So what is the range on the Tesla?
So this Tesla Model 3 that I had has I charged it to full one time. You generally don't want to charge it to full, but when you're traveling a distance, you can do that. And it's not my car, so I'm also trying to not ruin my friend's battery, right? But like one time when we were about to take a very big leg, we charged it almost to full, and it was 299 or something like that, it said. So basically 300 mile max range, although practically speaking, it was mostly in the 260, 270 range.
Yeah, so I'm sort of like the biggest issue for me. I tried to sell my dad on an electric car years ago, like when the Teslas first started coming out. And I was like, he was in the market for a new car. I was like, you should get an electric car. I think it'd be great for you. And his biggest, I think, wariness of that point was the range issue.
Oh, yeah.
And
obviously, range anxiety is real.
There was much less infrastructure built out about this whenever they started 8-10 years ago. I don't remember. And I was looking because my parents frequently drive to see my mother's family in upstate western New York,
right,
Rochester. And so that is about, it's a little under 400 miles from where we are. And so I was like looking online now, and I was like, where would I have them stop in order to actually, and like there are options, there's lots of options, and I think a big part of it just came down to them: A, the infrastructure wasn't there at the time, and B, it was changing habits, and changing habits is hard, especially if you've been doing something the same way for decades, and it's like, all right.
And Tesla was early enough in this that they built their supercharger infrastructure because they realized they were not going to sell cars unless they had a charging network. So they built their own charging network. And it's Tesla only, right? But there is also another charging, you know, a set of charging networks that are out there for other cars. And we didn't experience on this. My understanding is that there are more of them with fewer places to charge, and it will probably be an issue. But again, there's money to be made by the people hosting the chargers and by the charging station manufacturers themselves, operators themselves. Like our Whole Foods has a couple or three EVgos, right?
I see them a bunch around these days too, yeah.
But, my back
city
of the
envelope has them in some of the municipal lots. Like, they're around.
My back of the envelope calculation is that if your dad had a Tesla, he would charge outside Albany and then outside Syracuse, and that would be what he would
do. Yeah, that would be one option.
25 minutes in Guilderland, New York, and 15 minutes in Syracuse.
Guilderland. Guilderland, where there is a rest stop there that might be at the rest stop. I'm not sure. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. And I mean, batteries, I'm sure, will... there's a lot of interest in battery technology, and I'm sure batteries will continue to improve. They've kind of... a lot of cases, they felt kind of stagnant for the last few years, but there's a lot of stuff happening in that arena right now that's eventually going to trickle down. And it's just the simple facts of the situation that as electric cars become more prevalent, all of these other things will come up around it, right? If there's more customers with electric cars, more of those places are going to put the charges in. Like you said, more people are going to be spending on battery technology. All this stuff is going to improve.
Yeah, because the infrastructure is only going to get better because you just need electricity. I mean, it's not as simple as that. You've got to have transformers and stuff, but like if you've got electricity, you can do
it. It can be any kind of electricity too, right? Which is the great part, which is like it can be clean energy. It can be renewable resources, all this stuff. It doesn't, the electricity itself is agnostic about where it's coming from.
What I would say is if you're worried about getting an electric car because of range, I wouldn't worry about it too much. The modern electric cars have range. My Nissan Leaf doesn't have any range, but modern electric cars have pretty good range. There are lots of fast charging options.
Plus,
mostly you never need them because it's only really when you're going on a road trip that you would need something like that. Like in this, Tesla, I had that moment that struck me. It's like this Tesla I could drive to an Apple event. Not that we're having them right now in person, but I could drive that to an Apple event and back. Without, like, I wouldn't have to charge. I wouldn't have to do anything because it's, you know, I never am driving somewhere in a day, almost never, 98% of the time, that requires 200 miles or 280 miles of range. It just doesn't happen.
Right. And then the two things that to keep in mind with these are always, one, arguably it's a lot easier to, you know, find someplace with electricity than find someplace with gas.
Well, that's...
right? Like, right? Well, that's one part of it.
And also, if you're going somewhere to stay, I mean, because that's the thing, we ended up at my mom's house. And like, you're like, well, okay, I can get most of the way there, but then I'm going to get to my destination and I'm going to need to charge. What am I going to do? And it's like, every electric car comes with a little charging pack in the back that you can plug into a wall outlet, and it's slow. Tesla was charging on my mom's wall outlet at 5 miles an hour, just a standard wall outlet. 5 miles an hour isn't great, but at the same time, if there are chargers around you, you get there in the evening like we did, plug in, and just have dinner and go to sleep, even that will get you
to the next station,
to the next charger, wherever it is. So we just left it for a couple of days, and then it was a full charge on that very slow charge.
The one exception, and I thought about this only because we were doing our house hunting last year, is like, if you don't have a place with a driveway,
yes, yeah,
that is a challenge.
That's going to be a big limitation. When you've got big range cars, it becomes you just need a place to charge, right? So it could be at home. It could be at work. Yep. Or this is why my Whole Foods has three EVgos in it.
It's
right?
got to be the you stop somewhere.
Do you have to go to the grocery store? Because for this to work, yes, anywhere that somebody would go with their car needs to have chargers, because it may be their opportunity to charge their car.
Exactly.
Is at Whole Foods, right? And that's where they're going to get that done.
The main distinction is it's not that different in some ways from I'm going on a long trip, I better fill up the tank. The difference being it takes me 5 minutes to fill up the tank and not half an hour to get to a useful charge. I don't want to sit at a gas station for half an hour.
And that's where the tech will improve too, because I think that the charging speeds are also really increasing. But yeah, you're right. I would say the chargers aren't like gas stations in that one sense, which is you're not stuck, because gas stations are kind of gross, right? You're not stuck at that. You're stuck in a parking lot at somebody's restaurant or set of restaurants or a strip mall or something like that, where usually it's sort of like there's an activity, which is good because if you were just literally at a gas station at an electrical pump, it would be grim, but it isn't quite that. We stopped at one place it was right by Banning, which is right as you're about to go past the big casino out there for people who've driven I-10 and then into the Palm Springs area. It's right before that, right before the windmills. And it was literally next to an In-N-Out. They had 20 charging spaces. And I thought, and there was a bunch of other restaurants around too, but I was like, well, this is perfect, right? This is hey, road trippers, In-N-Out Burger and Tesla supercharger, and they're right here. I'm like, yeah, this is pretty good life. I could live my life this way.
We'll get there. Yeah. We'll get there. That'll be life.
It's fun. Also, electric cars are fun to drive because they, even my Leaf accelerates dramatically.
Tesla,
oh boy. So very easy to go very fast and not even... I had a couple moments on the freeway where I'm like, there's a weird driver here and I'm just going to get around them and go. And I was like, oh, 100 miles an hour, huh? Okay, that happened. Back it off. But really easy to do in an electric car.
One of these days, I'll get myself one.
All right, next week, next Friday, we're going to have a lot of event nonsense to talk about. We'll see how my careful estimates of predictions.
How those pay off. Yeah. Because you guys are doing your draft, and then over on the rebound, we'll have a live show. Because our usual recording time is 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. So we'll be live basically not an hour or two after the event, probably.
Yeah. Well, that'll be for people who do the live listen, and you can do that. If you're a member, you can do it in the Discord at Relay FM, or just via the website for Rebound or for Relay FM, you can listen live. We will probably be right after the event with Upgrade, because I've got a thing a little later in the day. So we're going to probably just wedge it right in there as soon as they're done, 5 minutes after. And then so just make a day of it. Go listen to Upgrade live, then roll over to the Rebound and listen live. And I'll put in a plug here. I use Broadcasts, which is by Stephen Trouton Smith. It's an app that plays live audio streams from the internet. So if you're I don't want to put it in a web browser or whatever, I use Broadcasts. I added Relay FM, and you can put ATP in there, and you can put The Incomparable, and you can put The Rebound and as a little saved favorite. And then you just press the button and the live stream comes out. It's great. I love it. So, and it's on all platforms. It's Mac, iPad, and iPhone. So Broadcasts. Check it out.
There you go.
A little tip. All right. Well, going to be a big week, but we'll be back here as always. And until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.